This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
The San Francisco 49ers are exactly where Seattle was in November of 2012. They've got a championship caliber defense, and they hope they've got the right quarterback. Unlike Seattle, it's now 2 years deep, and they're still waiting for some sort of confirmation. It's interesting, Paul, and it struck me the similarities between not just how the teams were built, but the fact that in each case, the quarterback was supposed to be kind of the finishing piece. And that's an awful lot of pressure to put on a player. And if they're not able to do it, maybe we saw the dangers of that, where Jimmy Garoppolo is good enough to get you to the Super Bowl, or at least not get in the way of you getting to the Super Bowl, but he wasn't enough to put him over the top.
Russell Wilson was an amazing accident for the Seahawks. I think that's a fair way of assessing it. They brought in Matt Flynn. They thought he was going to be the starter. For Garoppolo, he was the made man before he had even set foot on the field for the San Francisco 49ers. He plays half a season at the end of the 2017 year. He plays three games before tearing his ACL last year. And then this past season that we just saw unfold right before our eyes, he plays an entire 19-game slate. And the sad thing is, Danny, there has not been, I think, one point where San Francisco 49er fans, San Francisco 49er brass, their coaching staff, their players could say to themselves, he's the guy. And that's not good, because it's been now 2.5 years, and you're technically entering year 3.5 next season.
They're in a weird spot, because in some ways, they made Jimmy Garoppolo. You're right. He was a made man from the moment he stepped in there. At the same time, it's not like they had great players that they lost. There wasn't people that they wanted to pay that they couldn't pay because of Garoppolo. But they're at a point now where if he's not the guy, they've got to find the guy. Right? Because that defense is about to start getting expensive. You called Russell Wilson an accident, and I think that that's one way certainly of looking at it. It was not their plan to have a third-round pick beat out Matt Flynn to be the starter. I think when they signed Flynn, it was with the hope that, hey, he wins our starting job. The one thing I would say is that Seattle went about it and about picking their quarterback by making a series of smaller stakes investments. Whether it was trading for Charlie Whitehurst, they gave up basically what amounted to a third-round pick and swap spots in the second round to get Whitehurst and pay him $5 million a year. They signed Tavares Jackson to a similar size deal. They signed Flynn for more money, but none of those were that sort of backbreaking, all right, here's a big bunch of our chips and this has got to be the guy. And then they picked Russell Wilson, and the idea there was, let the guy answer it. Let one of these guys, we're going to keep taking these moderate-sized investments until one of them separates and differentiates himself. The 49ers went with a different approach, and some of it people felt it fell into their laps, but they essentially decided on the guy before he showed them he was the guy, right? There's an act of faith that was made. When you make a quarterback a top-five pick, or you pay a quarterback a big-budget deal, you're saying this has got to be the guy, and then you just sit and you cross your fingers and you hope that he's the guy.
Here's the thing. I thought he was the guy. I thought he was the guy in New England. I saw him play in that second game where he's filling in for a suspended Tom Brady, and yeah, it was only one half against the Dolphins, but he looked just outstanding in that game. He actually jumped off the screen. And sometimes when you see a guy jump off the screen, you can tell yourself, yeah, this guy actually could be the heir apparent to Tom Brady. Then you combine that with all the paranoia and the grumpiness between Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, that led to, eventually, Garoppolo being traded to the 49ers for just a second-round pick when a lot of people thought he was worth more than that. You thought to yourself, okay, well, if Belichick had his way, he would want to keep Garoppolo around and maybe move on from Tom Brady. That obviously didn't happen. But we've been waiting for one of those moments, like I saw with Jimmy Garoppolo against the Miami Dolphins in that season, all of this time. And guess what? We have not seen anything close to that. And after a certain point, the 49ers have to be real with themselves. I was in this spot, Danny, back in Houston when covering the Texans. We were very patient with Brock Osweiler, waiting for Brock Osweiler to show us something. And then eventually everyone was laughing at how bad he was. And even though the Texans were winning football games, you had to realize, like, yeah, he's not the guy. You got to move on from him at the end of the year. I am wondering how close the 49ers are to that.
When do you pull the plug on a guy? And I ask that, it's a good question. should Detroit have pulled the plug on Matt Stafford previously? And this would be the danger for San Francisco, is they've got a quarterback that's good enough to keep the show on the road and good enough to keep winning games and keep getting you into the playoffs, but isn't good enough to get you over the hump. And at that point, he's going to become expensive and he's going to leave you high-centered, essentially. When do you pull the plug on a guy, and how do you go about determining whether or not this guy is good enough to win you a Super Bowl, that you can win with him?
It's a hard question to answer, Danny, because there are so many teams that lie to themselves and kid to themselves, and they're wondering, okay, well, where would I be if I go into the land of unknown? You saw it with Andy Dalton, who has been the quarterback for the Bengals for a long time. Now, the Bengals just don't care about winning, so there's that. They're also cheapskates. But that's the Bengals.
One point being aside before we move on, if I was another team, I would go hard after Andy Dalton this offseason. I think he might be one of the better quarterbacks available. I think I might be more interested in him than Cam Newton. Just simply, if you got him on a team that wants to win, like, you might be able to make a huge impact with that.
If Ryan Tannehill, who also was a guy that the Miami Dolphins were nervous about what would happen if they let him go. By the way, he leaves and he's better. Adam Gase, what's up? You get to a point where eventually you're lying to yourself. And you pay the guy a big contract because you're afraid of what's next. And, yeah, maybe that contract's easy to get out from. I think right now the 49ers know what he is. And they're, I think, nervous to admit that he's not going to get any better. The question I would have for anyone, say there's a San Francisco 49er listening right now, what is it that he's going to get better at? That's what you have to answer the question to. And right now, I don't know. And that's not a good thing to think about for a quarterback who's 28 years old.
No, it's definitely not. And in fact, when you see it all, we've got some of the sound from 49er fans, which is going to be amusing to play over the course of the show. Them calling in. Yeah, it's very entertaining. A question of, do you know who he is? Are you familiar with everything that you've seen from him? When do you know that it's time to yank the cord? It's tough. You've got to start, if you're the 49ers, though, you've got to start preparing. You've got to start looking at the possibility that you might need to develop someone else. Because there's two things that cost in quarterback terms, money and time. And don't underestimate the investment that time is. When you decide you're going to invest years into a guy, you make a guy a franchise quarterback, it's minimum, in my mind, a three-year commitment before you're at the point where you're like, okay, we don't think he's the guy. And if you think you can win with kind of a game manager type quarterback or someone that just executes the offense as opposed to someone who's a playmaker, I'm not sure that's going to work in today's NFL.
The crazy thing that we have to say at the tail end of this conversation is that if Jimmy Garoppolo hits that throw to Emmanuel Sanders, this is an entirely different story. And we're looking at things entirely differently. But for the 49ers next year, you're in the toughest division in the NFL, the NFC West. There is not one team that is a laughingstock in that division. Kyler Murray and the Cardinals are at the very least rising. You know what the Seahawks are. They almost beat you in the second go-round. They beat you the first go-round. And the Rams, at the very least, are there. It is not going to be as easy for them to get back to this situation that they got to, where for Kansas City, they're probably going to be right back in the same sitting situation at the end of the year. And then you got teams like Baltimore, New Orleans, all of that. So they have to find out the answer to that question a lot more quickly than we do. And also, they need to have that fallout plan that is at the very least being built. Because right now, they need to know that the odds of them getting back to where they are and playing a perfect playoffs where they can just run the football to a very easy degree, the odds of that happening next year are probably low.
Seattle's lucky in this sense. At each step, at each turn, when they've asked, okay, is Russell Wilson, is he good enough to start as a rookie? Yes, he was good enough to start as a rookie. Can you win with him? Can you win with him with the championship defense? Maybe it's a little too much, because up until November, there were real legitimate discussions about maybe Seattle would have been better off. No, he's good enough to win with right now. And then you get to the playoffs. I know the moment when I knew Russell had it. I think anybody watching in Chicago, early December, he was so good, he won a game twice. And afterwards, I remember Michael Robinson saying, our quarterback is a bad man. Kind of echoing what Cassius Clay, or maybe by that point he was Muhammad Ali, had said. It was on the road against the Bears in the Central, all of those different things, and he answered it. And once you get to that moment where you're like, all right, that's it, nothing's ever the same. For the 49ers, they got the exact opposite of that moment in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl, where they're like, uh-oh, uh-oh, we needed the guy to make a play, and he was 3 for 11 passing for 36 yards, and on two of the plays, he wasn't able to get rid of the ball.
Right. If that was the moment, well, he failed there. And if you want to bring up other moments during the season, comebacks against the Arizona Cardinals, a comeback against the New Orleans Saints, you really are fishing and trying, I think, harder than you need to find that one Jimmy G shining moment. And that's because there just hasn't been one to a degree that the 49ers should have full confidence in him.
It is Danny and Gallant. It's time for us to get to What to Watch For.
What to Watch For, every morning at 7:10. Brought to you by Dubin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
First thing to keep an eye out for, you need to know, Marco Gonzalez signed a contract extension for the Mariners. 4 years, $30 million. Here's why it's good news. The Mariners have money to spend right now, and they're not looking to spend it to maximize 2020 wins. This is a great way to spend it. Locking up guys who you hope will be part of the future. And go ahead and pay that money now, because who else are you going to pay? It's not like you want to bring in a free agent. You want to have that money to spend a couple years from now, or to use on guys who you hope will be helping you a couple years from now.
You also can't have a team that's just young players. You need to have someone who is a calming influence in that clubhouse. And that is, I think, something that you would have definitely with Marco Gonzalez around. Someone needs to be there to teach these guys how to do what's necessary to win in baseball and how to just be a professional. So good job by the Mariners getting somebody aboard on that front, and we'll see if there are more guys along those lines.
What to watch for.
The UFC is coming to Seattle at some point this year, per President Dana White, who told Bob Stelton for Get in the Cage.
Do you like UFC?
I found myself, outside of the title fight, enjoying the build-up to the Conor McGregor versus the guy who should never be allowed to wear a cowboy hat again. I thought that the fights leading up to it were good, but the McGregor fight was a little bit disappointing.
He kicked his head off. He kicked him. He knocked him out in like 40 seconds. It was awesome.
I thought it was cool how he took the guy out with his shoulder, but I was hoping for a little bit more of a competitive bout than Conor McGregor just being like, all right, I'm back in UFC and I'm just knocking everyone around. But it's a sport that I would definitely be willing to watch again when the next event happens featuring a big name like that.
We've known each other for, 4 months now? A little more than 4 months? What do you think I feel about the UFC?
Something tells me that while you appreciate some of the fighting style, that you think that the people that watch the sport are maybe a little bit difficult.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I love UFC. As a matter of fact, I love going to UFC events. I've enjoyed it. My brother had one of the best quotes. We were leaving from the Tacoma Dome, which, by the way, might be where this card is at, because, well, Key Arena isn't really Key Arena anymore, and it's not there, and they're going to have it somewhere. My brother looks to me as we were coming out of a fight. It was the Bob Sapp. A bunch of other guys fought on that. Actually, Jorge Masvidal fought on that card. And he turns to me and goes, yeah, you could get into a fight without even saying a word out here. It's just like, just look long and hard at the wrong guy and you're going to get socked, which is absolutely true.
What to watch for?
Well, watch for Vic Beasley hitting the open market, and Jessamine saw this. It's one of the funniest Twitter exchanges I've ever seen, in which the Falcons, on their Twitter account, announced that they would not be pursuing contract negotiations with Vic Beasley. And someone responded to the Falcons' official Twitter, what's your source on this? And the Falcons responded, literally us.
The Atlanta Falcons. It's like the Blue Jays did that last year. They were like, literally us.
Yeah, it's us. Yeah, we're saying
we're the source.
You know, when you get past the funny part, and this is a guy that played in the Dan Quinn defense, maybe you think he's a potential signing for the Seahawks. I look at just the pettiness of the first tweet to say, we are not going to negotiate a contract with Vic Beasley. What? Why would you put that out there unless you like have an issue with him that maybe you want the rest of the NFL to know? It's a very bizarre move by an organization to say, yeah, we're not going to negotiate with this guy. Like, it's unnecessary, isn't it?
It is, and it makes me think there's something else coming.
Like a suspension?
Would you be getting out in front of something? That's the only incentive that I could see for you saying. Like, the one is that he's either being, his agent won't stop calling. So they're like, look, no, we're not going to, no, we're going to put it on. Stop calling. stop calling. Or there's something you want to make it clear that this is a guy you're not seeking to retain when it's coming. I'd keep an eye out for what's going to happen with Vic Beasley. That is what to watch for. Now it's time to bring in the professor, John Clayton, with us.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Presented by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Professor, what's going on?
It's good to be back home.
Yeah, how was that getting back?
Oh, well, I was at about 11:30 last night.
Oh, yeah, man, well, yes. good to have you back.
Yeah, great to have you back from Miami. I'm jealous that you got to go to Miami, but I'm very curious as to how you thought about this Falcons tweet yesterday. They self-report that they are not pursuing a contract with Vic Beasley. It seems very fishy.
I don't know. I mean, it is kind of weird that they would do it right after the Super Bowl and all that stuff. But I guess just out of clarity, just to let you know, he's a former first round pick. He's a guy that had 16 sacks in a season, and it's been a disappointment the last couple of years. And so, that happens. I mean, you see, particularly at this time now, because this is the time where you can. Yesterday was the first day you can start cutting players. So Greg Olsen was cut by the Carolina Panthers, and you start to look into what's going to be back. And what's going to be in it. But it's different, but I don't know if I can read too much more into it other than he's a disappointment and they don't want him back.
There's no advantage for doing that, though, right, John? It's basically just answering questions. It's not like it clears salary cap space. It's basically saying, hey, we're moving on from this guy.
Yeah, but there's no disadvantage to it either. I mean, let's put it this way. When you look at the free agent list, I mean, you can kind of figure out, in most cases, who's not going to be back and who is. And you knew he was not going to be back. I mean, his playing time started to diminish. His productivity seemed to diminish. And so, that's just one of those things now that, people are asking questions about the roster, and he's not going to be part of the roster.
Do you think the Seahawks would be interested in him?
As a number two type of addition on the defensive line because, he's, what is he, 28, maybe a year or two older than what they might want. But I think that when you look and if they can get Clowney back, they still need maybe one or two pass rushers. And, if they can get him on a kind of a prove it type of deal with $3 or $4 million, it'd be a consideration.
John, what do you make of the conversation coming out of New England saying that Brady wants more than $30 million a year? Do you think the Patriots would give him that?
I would say a little bit more. But I think the Hulu commercial, I think, started to show, okay, there's some positive things going that now can keep him to stay. I mean, he's had conversations. It's like, okay, you're going to pay me? It's like, okay, I'll pay you 30. Okay, that's only within $3 or $4 million of where it needs to be. So that's encouraging. Part two is that, he needs to see, are you going to give me some players? If I'm taking less, you didn't give me any players last year, and I've been playing for 70 cents on the dollar since 2013. So it's like, are you going to pay me? And, of course, are you going to get me guys? And so if they can show that, then I think he's going to stay. But I think that, the way that he did the commercial shows you that he's basically calling out the Patriots but is willing to kind of make some fun and play with it. And so, the commercial on Sunday, I think, starts to give an indication I think he could be back.
Derrick Henry told Rich Eisen on the Rich Eisen Show that Ezekiel Elliott's contract is the floor for him. He later tried to clarify it somewhat on Instagram, saying that he was a little confused by the question, but I think we all are in agreement that Derrick Henry is going to get a whole lot of money from the Tennessee Titans. What's your opinion on running backs getting these ginormous contracts? Do you feel that teams should be willing to give them out, or should they be a little bit more cautious?
I think you got to be cautious because I think you see the contracts given out to some of the big players, and again, in the case of Henry, they've got to do something, and it's got to be somewhere near Elliott. I don't know if I wouldn't call it the floor if you're Henry, because again, are you as good as Elliott? I know you were better last year, but are you good overall during your career? And the answer has been no. But you can see from David Johnson getting $13 million a year, and he's now on the bench. That didn't work out. I mean, you can certainly see Le'Veon Bell was overpaid, and I think they'd love to find a way to get out of that contract and get him to another team. So it's tough to be able to do it because you pay basically five positions. You pay the quarterback, the defensive end, the pass blocking left tackle. You pay the cornerback and the wide receiver, and then the running back's number six in line. And particularly if you're a team that's paying a quarterback, and this team now has to pay Ryan Tannehill or another quarterback quarterback is sometimes going to be tough. But in the end, I mean, he's the face of their franchise, a running quarterback on a running team. So they have to do something around $13 or $14 million.
John, being in the Super Bowl, what sense did you get for the free agent market? Do you think it's going to be an expensive and hot market?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Yeah, because even I think a little bit more in the last couple of years, because you got quarterbacks in there, and that's going to really jack up the market. You know, when you got maybe what, 6-7 quarterbacks that are going to get paid, if not more, whether it's re-signs or signs, then it's going to be big there. I mean, certainly it's big at the cornerback position. You got 6 maybe defensive ends that could get paid well. You know, when I was going through the list last year at unrestricted free agency, there was about 20 guys that got $10 million a year or more. And I think there's going to be more than that coming up this year.
Odell Beckham Jr. said that he has a good feeling about working with new Browns head coach Kevin Stefanski. When's the next time that we're going to hear Odell Beckham Jr.'s thoughts on his head coach?
Probably when he starts cussing him out or something like that on the field or so. Because I guess you say good things now. You're trying to put a bad season of mistakes by Beckham and that behind and try to embrace yourself to a new coach. But see, the problem is he's not going to be able to meet this coach until he gets to the OTAs in April. So it's not like there's going to be this big party that all they're going to be attending, and Odell's going to be there with Kevin Stefanski. But, you say positive now and then you wait for the actions. And, just like Baker Mayfield last Friday came out and admitted, it's like, well, I probably said too much. It probably was too mouthy and all those stuff. Well, Odell's the same way. So today it's good. We'll see when it gets bad.
Do you think there's a chance he might get traded?
No. I mean, there's always a chance, but then, the $18 million contract, that's going to hold things up, the way he is. I mean, there's always going to be a chance because, again, you don't know where Kevin Stefanski is going to be. You don't know Andrew Berry, the new general manager, is going to be. And so there's a chance, but, again, he's one of the best receivers in football, and they want to keep talent, not give away talent.
There are a lot of quarterbacks that we're wondering about where they'll end up. We talked about Tom Brady, Phillip Rivers, maybe Andy Dalton. You could also talk about Ryan Tannehill, too. Alex Smith had some very interesting comments about the injury that he had suffered. He almost died from a broken leg, and he's trying to rehabilitate that thing. Do you think that he will ever end up as a starter again in the NFL?
I tend to doubt it because he gets this really bad injury at a older time in his career, and you just wonder where he's going to be. I think it's pretty safe to say if he's going to be playing this year, which is still a big if, he's going to start out as a backup because he's not going to be in the front line of anybody that's going to get any kind of a starting contract, particularly with the number of guys that are out there. So it's like, okay, it's like start back up first and then see where you are.
John, do you expect Seattle to be one of the more aggressive teams in free agency?
I think they'll make a strike or two, where before, they usually like to get the compensatory picks and not pay big. But I think they realize, you got two teams in this division that went to the Super Bowl in the last 2 years. Those two teams lost in the Super Bowl. And so now you got to get the division. If you're in a stage right now where you got Russell Wilson at the age of 31 going on 32 to try to get some things around him. So it's kind of like, 2013, when they went out and they got Cliff Avril, they got Michael Bennett. So I think that they'll strike maybe one, possibly two. They're not going to go crazy, that's for sure. But I don't know what guys that they can get, what guys they will get, but I think they'll be a little bit more aggressive than in past years.
If they don't go crazy, do you feel that they would be likely to potentially trade up in the draft?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, they got to see where the pass rushers are and where they feel about them, and they have a second round pick. But it's pretty clear. One, they've got to re-sign Clowney. I think he's so important, and I think that you can hear Russell wants it. But they still need to add somebody, probably two guys on the other side. And so they need to. If they can't get one in free agency, then they need to trade up to get one.
Professor, we always appreciate your time.
Okay, thank you.
Glad to have John back. We do have one of the calls from one of the San Francisco radio stations. All of us spent a chunk of time yesterday listening to 95.7 The Game, which has it's been eminently enjoyable. And here was one of the callers who was worried that his 49ers were resembling another franchise known for not winning.
Man, that was terrible, man. I mean, Latrell Sprewell, man. Bunch of choke artists, man.
This is driving me nuts, man. I mean, we're the San Francisco 49ers. I feel sorry for Joe Staley, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, can you imagine him 2 times in the Super Bowl? That took him about 3 coaches to get back there. He was 0-2 in a. Dude, we're not the Cincinnati. Cincinnati Bengals, man. We're the 49ers.
Quite enjoyable. Quite enjoyable. We'll get a little more angst in a little bit. But coming up next, we know who the two best quarterbacks in the league are. But between Russell and Wilson and Patrick Mahomes, and Patrick Mahomes, do we know who's better? Paul thinks so. We'll get to that next on Danny and Gallant.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
In the wake of the Super Bowl, we now see how good Patrick Mahomes is. Even in a game where he plays horribly, the last 7 minutes, he can turn the entire thing around by playing to a level that we have come to expect out of him down the stretch. Russell Wilson's one of the best quarterbacks in the game. He's the best quarterback that I've ever covered. But let's throw resumes out right now. I'm willing to admit that Patrick Mahomes has taken a step past him. And that's not necessarily a shot at Wilson. This is a guy in Patrick Mahomes who at 24 years old looks like he could potentially be the greatest of all time. I think Russell Wilson's clearly the number two. And Danny, I wonder if it's possible for Russell Wilson to potentially all of a sudden find himself taking a step past Patrick Mahomes over the rest of his career. It's going to be really hard to do it, though.
It is, because, and we'll talk to Brock about this at 8 o'clock, Patrick's younger, and he's already avoiding mistakes. I think that's one of the things that Russell does best, is that he makes plays while not making mistakes. And Mahomes is certainly at this point as mobile as Russell is. He's got every bit the arm strength that Russell does. It's not like Russell's got a stronger arm. Russell, I think, has a better deep ball. Mahomes has more, he improvises more on the run. I don't know if it's a matter that I think if there is a difference between the two, and I would tend to agree with you that I think Mahomes is a better quarterback right now. I think it's mostly in the physical tools department. And maybe Russell will continue to refine his understanding of the game and be able to check out more. I think the also part of this, though, is that it's not quite a fair comparison, because in Andy Reid, Mahomes is playing for a coach who knows how to accentuate best the strengths of the quarterback. And I don't know if Seattle's offense is as geared toward featuring the quarterback as Kansas City's is.
Is it something that can change then? That's something that Russell Wilson has somewhat intimated at over the last couple of weeks. We've heard him first off talk about how he would like to see the team go after a superstar in free agency. And we have also heard him discuss, all right, well, maybe we can tinker some things with the way that we play so that maybe we can get that second half kind of juice that we have offensively to take place in the first half. That would definitely help him a little bit more. I think the physical thing is the big one right now, Danny, because when you look at a guy in Russell Wilson who has been sacked 40-plus times pretty much every single season of his career, and you realize he's 5'11", 215 pounds, that sometimes he just is not going to be able to see downfield as well as someone who's 6'3", 230 pounds that can throw at all sorts of different angles. And that's the big discrepancy, I think, the biggest of all between the two right now, is that it's not just that both of them don't make mistakes, because they're both great at it right now. It's that also Patrick Mahomes somehow has gotten really good at not just avoiding sacks, but also scrambling.
There's no doubt about that. Like Mahomes' ability to create and to improvise. It's an interesting question about kind of who's better, because I feel Russell and Patrick are in the same tier where, look, you don't have any boxes unchecked by those guys. Like that's, you don't have any questions. You don't have any sort of like, oh, if only he could do this. But that idea of how do you make the most of it? I do think Seattle can learn from some of those things. And just because they're not going to overhaul their offense to make it like Kansas City's, I think there is the opportunity for them to do some things to accentuate what Russell's skill set is. Because Russell's advantage should be experience, right?
Yes.
Like of all the different things. Well, and not only that, but playing hurt. Russell's been able to play hurt over the course of his career. And we saw Mahomes had to do that this year. He had the dislocated kneecap, missed two games, and came back. And I think it was clear by the end of the season he was much healthier than he was at the middle of the season. So Mahomes got his first part and opportunity to do that. But, I mean, Patrick still hasn't played all that much football. And he hasn't played a ton.
He hasn't.
Two full seasons
That's
as
it.
A starter. And So we'll see what happens when he starts to get more experience. We'll also see what happens as he starts to get a little banged up and can't move maybe as well as he did now. He's physically, don't you peak right about then? Physically, for a quarterback, aren't you about as good arm strength, mobility, like those sort of things? You're about as good as you're going to get when you get into the league. You just then become smarter.
I think so. I do think maybe when you're 25, 26 years old, I do think that there's an element of being a little bit perhaps stronger. But I think after that, it's all probably going downhill. For Mahomes, I mean, he's only 24. So there's the real chance that there are things that maybe he could get a little bit better at. But after a certain point, yeah, you do get to a time where all of a sudden you're 31 years old and it's a little bit more sore getting up every single morning. What do you think it's most realistic, Danny, for Russell Wilson to improve in going forward? Because I don't know that there's going to be one element of his game that all of a sudden he just completely changes, but I think one of the great things about watching Tom Brady age is that Brady has added little small elements to his game over time, and I think that instead of just being the, I think for the most part, pocket passer that was not quite a statue but wasn't exactly the most fleet of foot when it came to making throws on the run, that's something that he got good at the end of his career. Maybe not the last two seasons, but it's something that he had improved at later on in his career. What is it that you think that Russell Wilson can improve on?
Quick game, the ability to get the ball out faster and to find easier, reliable gains. I think that's probably something that's been on the list every year for the past 5 or 6 years. And it's hard because you're asking him to balance the possibilities of the big plays, which is something that he excels at, with quick, sustainable gains. I think one of the answers to why does Seattle tend to start slower, I think it's because Russell's kind of feeling his way through. Like, he wants to see what they're doing, much like we talked about yesterday with Andy Reid scripting the first 15 plays. Some of what they do is designed to figure out how the defense is accounting for or reacting to certain things. And Russell is so risk averse that I think he's willing to kind of play it a little safer in the first half to figure out what's going on. And then, okay, this is the way that I'm going to go after them, that he's more clinical and analytical. But I think that the ability to get quick, reliable gains is something that this offense would benefit from a great deal.
It's something he's never done. And also, I mean, it would probably lend itself to less sacks too. And is that because of Brian Schottenheimer? Is that because of the offense? Or is this just a career-long trait of Russell Wilson that maybe is something you can't shake at this point? We asked the question a little bit earlier about Jimmy Garoppolo. Hey, what is it that Jimmy Garoppolo at age 28 can get better at? At a certain point, I think that most athletes are who they are. For the most part, as I said with Brady, you can change small little elements of your game, but for the most part, you are who you are. You're not all of a sudden going to like get faster at age 32 or age 33 or something like that. And that is something that I just don't know that it's ever going to change, because it hasn't changed to this point.
I would agree with that. I don't think Russell's at a point where we're going to see marked development or improvement. I think he's in the wheelhouse, right? He's going to have and incrementally improve his understanding of the game and how to counterpunch things that defenses try to do with him. But he's not going to get faster. He's not going to, his arm strength isn't going to go up. This is, you're hoping that he sustains, and I think you can say that he'll sustain his peak for another 5 or 6 years, but he's in sort of the quarterback's wheelhouse where experience and ability start to intersect, and his ability, the actual physical talents, are going to start to erode a little bit. But his understanding and his experience is going to compensate for that. It's kind of, he's in the sweet spot for a quarterback. This should be the time to make hay, whatever that is. Haymaking time.
And it's great to have one of the best two quarterbacks in the game with Russell Wilson. Look, we know who Russell Wilson is, and when he talks, he doesn't exactly say a whole lot. Next on Danny and Gallant, Russ did say something about Seattle's offense last week. We're going to try to decipher it next. It's 710 ESPN Seattle. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
This is Danny and Gallant. We'll take another eavesdrop of San Francisco radio, which is just always, look, I'm ugly on the inside, so it's fulfilling to my dark and twisted soul. I don't know about you guys. But first, Russell Wilson was asked over the weekend about, well, the slow starts and comparisons to Kansas City's offense. Paul, I'm going to tell you before I heard it what I was told that this was. because I don't think the sound quite matches up. But what I was told is, hey, guys, Russell is just as frustrated as we are with the offense. It was posted on Twitter. It was from the Let Russ Cook contingent, to whom I would point out that when Russ is in fact allowed to cook, and in fact he's not forced to follow a recipe, he's allowed to freelance. But anyway, I was told Russell is just as frustrated as we all are. Here was Wilson asked about the slow starts.
I think that's what we got to figure out, you know, as we're going throughout this offseason, and we're trying to capture that earlier on, because I think we do it really well. I mean, we've always been really good at 2 minute
amazing
offense. We've always been really good in those end of the half, those not always hurry up situations, but those up tempo moments. Yeah. And the reality is this: I think the defense gets tired. First thing.
Sure.
And the second thing is that I really know kind of what I want to get after them and how we want to get after them, especially in those moments. And guys just make plays in those moments. I think the freedom of just going after and just scoring as many points, you know, that's kind of what the Chiefs do.
Wow. He was really all over the place. If I had to guess what the point of his answer is that he's admitting that it's just a little bit different in the second half when the offense is trailing, just the way that they operate, and maybe he likes that it's just a little bit more different than what you see typically in the first half, where things are a little bit more regimented, especially when, you know, most teams typically script their first 15 plays. But, yeah, I don't really hear frustration.
I don't hear frustration. I'm not sure if he's advocating a change or if he's just acknowledging a difference. And there's an important distinction there. Look, the fact that Seattle is able to catch fire in the second half and is able to make up deficits, that's a result of either a change in the way they play or a change in the way defenses play. And it might be a combination of both of those. There's nothing to stop Seattle from changing the way its offense plays earlier, because even if Kansas City was able to win 3 playoff games by falling into a double-digit lead, I think we all can stand agreed that it's better not to trail by double digits than it is to trail by double digits.
Yes.
Like, there's no strategic advantage. And so we're all operating from the same place of, okay, can Seattle start better? Can they start the way that they finish? Because if that's the case, like, that's definitely what you would prefer. Given a choice of starting fast or finishing well, you would finish well. Preferably, you would do both, though, right? That's the best option.
Yeah, preferably you'd win by 40.
Right, which this team never does.
Instead, they go the wobbegong approach, which I've brought up before, which is essentially, hey, we're going to let you peck at us and peck at us and peck at us, and eventually we're going to wake up and we're going to surprise you. But that's, yeah, not an approach that you want to have every single week. I think there might be some that think that there would be more advantageous for the Seahawks to just be a little bit more freelanced, but that's not true either. That's not how the NFL works. It's not streetball.
Yeah, and that can be harder to sustain. Here was Russell continuing his answer.
They do a really good job. Andy Reid and Mahomes, they do a really good job of getting up to the ball, playing with their playmakers, and finding a way to make plays. And, you know, they score more points than everybody else. And I think that's the name of the game, is you can score one more point than they do.
Right.
And there's different ways to go about it. Listen, the reality is we've won a lot of football games over the years.
I know.
But we hold
a very high standard.
But I think there's also the expectation of being here, not just sitting here in this seat next to you guys, unfortunately.
Yeah, right. Being on the big banner
but being on the big banner and winning it all. So,
yeah.
We're gonna try to figure that out and see if we can get back here quickly.
What's he saying, Paul?
He's saying that Casey is explosive, which is obvious to everyone. He is saying that we need to score more points, which is obvious to everyone. Everything that he said in that statement is, I think, just an obvious statement of what is. And I don't think that there's really anything leading or intimating that things need to be different. I mean, he even said things have been really good here for a long period of time. It almost felt as if he wasn't advocating any change at all.
That's what I came away thinking. That he was acknowledging the differences in the offense and then advocating that their approach works pretty well, too. And in fact, in there, he echoed something Pete Carroll has said, which is that the defensive fatigue and that Russell figuring out after he pokes and prods for a quarter and a half, figuring out the way that he wants to attack him, that it's almost like he's establishing the jab for the first quarter and a half and like looking, oh, here's what they do when they think a combination's coming. And then that sets him up for it. It's an interesting question or decision that the Seahawks face this offseason, because the defense is of the two units is the one that clearly needs the most help. It's the offense that might have the most room for improvement simply because you have a quarterback who's so very good. So it creates this very strange approach where we're actually sort of wondering if they've got the right approach on what is the best part of their team, which is odd. Usually we spend all our time wringing our hands about the worst part of it, and it's almost like we've accepted, look, their defense is bad, and I don't know if it's going to get much better. So can we make the offense better even though it's really good? It's an interesting contrast.
You can maybe make the offense better, and we've discussed this before, by potentially adding on to it, but where they are right now, and you mentioned it, he is so right in saying that when – it's the second half, and all of a sudden the defense has been on the field basically like three drives in a row, like you saw with the Packers, and they're just giving up these long drives. They get tired. They get gassed. They don't want to be on the field anymore. And when you find yourself in those situations, guess what? Your offense plays better. So there is an element of 60-minute gamesmanship that I think the Seahawks do bring to the offense that some people are just unfortunately overlooking. There might be some other issues with the way that they go about, you know, deciding what to do on offense, but is it broken? I don't think it's broken. I think that we all agree that maybe they could throw it a little bit more. But the system, if it has Chris Carson, if it has Rashad Penny, this is a system that probably works pretty well in the playoffs. And honestly, I think they run all over Green Bay in the divisional round. And it's just a matter of, okay, well, what happens against San Francisco?
They might be able to win the game while attempting just eight passes, a la San Francisco. I don't know if they would do that. It's interesting that San Francisco got as far as they did without ever having really to throw the ball. And then you look at it, and it's like as far as they got, they ended up needing to throw it at the end, and they absolutely couldn't. And not that I'm shedding any tears. I don't think anybody in Seattle is. Bonte, Steiny, and Guru is a show on 95.7 The Game. They had a particularly entertaining series of calls. Here's one of them from yesterday.
Towards the end of the game, that defensive pass interference in the end zone, that's a punt call. That DB has every right to put his hands up. That was good, solid coverage.
It's a punk call.
It's a punk call.
The referee's a punk.
That's the easiest call in the world to make. And actually, unlike some of the underthrown passes, that was the right call, right?
It 100% was the right call. I hate that underthrows get rewarded with pass interference calls, but I mean, the guy essentially like tackled him in a loving embrace in the end zone.
And Kelce still got his hands on the ball.
Yep.
Like, it wasn't the idea that that was a bad call. I could see being mad about the Kittle one, because while it was pass interference, that was tic-tac. Or that wasn't tic-tac. It was pass interference. It's also the Super Bowl, and do you get the freedom to make some plays downfield? And anyway, it wouldn't have mattered much because the 49ers had burned a number of their time, or had not used their timeouts, so we're running out of time. Well, coming up next, anything Patrick Mahomes can do, Russell Wilson can too, except for one thing. Brock Heward's going to tell us what that is next.